Hello, once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me in the Bettors Box. This is BangTheBook.com's MLB Betting Podcast for Thursday, June 21st. I'm your host, Adam Burke. This and every edition of the Bettors Box, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. If you sign up using that promo code BANG200, you get 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. As you know, our Monday-Thursday format here with the Bettors Box, another edition of the Monday Mailbag coming up here on June 25th. So if you have any questions for that, please shoot them to me on Twitter at Skating Tripods, or you can email me adam@bangthebook.com. And of course, if you want the notes for the show, you can get on the mailing list for that by emailing me adam@bangthebook.com. My picks and tips article up for today, up every day over at the website. So make sure that you check that out right there on the front page. And of course, if you subscribe to notifications for the site, you'll get a little pop-up about that when you access the site. If you subscribe to those notifications, you'll know right away when I get that picks and tips piece up. Also, we do some push notifications for some of our other content as well. And speaking of other content, over at bangthebook.com, if you look on the right-hand side of the homepage, you'll see our new feature, Is Sports Betting Legal in My State? You click on the map of America, and then you can go. We have an interactive map at the top of the page where you can click on your state specifically, see what the progress is in your state. Also, some recent news stories about sports betting with regards to that state. And then it links to the neighboring sites. The ones that share a border are at the bottom of those pages. So we'll try to update that as we get some more news from state to state. Obviously, some states have already opened up for betting. Obviously, we know about Nevada, Delaware, and New Jersey, both taking bets now. West Virginia coming very, very quickly. Same thing with Mississippi. But a lot of states kind of in a holding pattern, sort of wondering where they're going to go. But in those state-by-state pages, I talk about whether or not it will be a third-party operator through the lottery, if there are a lot of physical locations that can incorporate sports betting. One state in particular, Oregon, already looking to go with mobile betting almost right away here. So you can get all of those updates for each specific state at bangthebook.com, sports betting legal in my state page, and you can go to those individual states. So it's a new project we're very excited about putting together over there. And, you know, we're going to update that as we need to with the new news that comes out. NFL season win totals are all posted at bangthebook.com. Keep checking out our World Cup coverage. Admir is doing a fantastic job with that. Game previews, picks, and predictions for every game of the World Cup. We had team and group previews in the lead up to the big tournament there in Russia, but you can still check out the picks and predictions for every game on a daily basis. College football season win totals have been assigned. Those should start rolling out probably next week, I would say, along with an updated set of summer power ratings for me. Then what I'm going to do as our writers put together those college football win totals, when we plug in the schedule tables, I'll put projected lines based on my power ratings. We're going to use those as the bang the book lines, so to speak, for all the games that are on the schedule. So lots of college football stuff coming your way here over the next 6 weeks or so. We hope to have all those season win totals done by about July 18th, 19th, 20th in that area right there. So we're going to have a good month to look at those before the college football season gets underway. And obviously with NFL season win totals, a couple of months before training camps really get going there. Also, one other article at bangthebook.com I want you to check out. NBA draft is tonight. I put together a piece on some of the draft props that are out there, some good betting opportunities with those. So that's right there on the homepage for today. Footballcontest.com, our proxy service for the Super Contest. And we're also going to do the Golden Nugget Ultimate Football Showdown Challenge, whatever the hell it's called this year. We're going to be doing those contests. We'll talk about them on the shows once we get Bang the Book Radio going again on a daily basis. But if you want to get involved in the Super Contest or the Golden Nugget, Maddie@footballcontest.com is your guy. Does a phenomenal job with communications and making sure that picks are entered correctly. Again, if you want to get in the Super Contest or the Golden Nugget, you have to sign up in person for those. And if you don't live in the state of Nevada, you will need a proxy. So Maddie@footballcontest.com is your guy for that. Speaking of contests, those are still going on at bangthebook.com as well. Daily streaker, monthly pick of the day, top monthly win percentage, top ROI, top number of units won, cash prizes available for those monthly winners, or if you put together a streak of seven or more. Obviously, a new month coming up here at the end of next week. So if you haven't gotten involved in those contests, that would be a good time for you to start. All right, let's go ahead and get into today's edition of the Bettors Box. We'll go beyond the box score, talk about our weekly exit velocity update. Then we'll go down the lines. I'll give you my pick for Thursday night, and then we'll preview some of the weekend matchups that are coming up here. So go ahead and start with a look beyond the box score. Let's talk about the Philadelphia Phillies. And, you know, on Monday's show, I had some talking points about the Phillies, and I discussed how they lost that opener to the Brewers 13-2, but then came back to win the series. And you kind of look for these watershed moments for teams over the course of the year. And you look at the Phillies coming out of that series, they pick up a nice series win. Then they come out and put up a four spot in the first inning on the Cardinals. And that was a very complex handicap. We talked about that game a ton, both in the article and on the show on Monday. The Cardinals have struggled in games immediately following a series against the Cubs. They're now 4-15 in their last 19 meetings immediately following a series against the Cubs. But that was a game where the handicap looked like it favored the Cardinals. The Phillies bullpen got a lot of work in over the weekend. They were pretty taxed. You know, if you played the first five, I know I had a couple of listeners reach out and tell me they played the first five with Philadelphia, and that was a good bet there in that one. But they blew that 4-0 lead that they had in the first inning. But they came back and walked the game off in the 10th inning. Tuesday night, they blew another lead, lost a one-run game. That was Sir Anthony Dominguez who gave up the winning run in that one. But again, that Phillies bullpen getting a significant workload in that middle game. Gabe Kapler pushed Nick Pivetta as far as he possibly could, kind of wound up not working out for him in this series. And then, you know, it's one of those things where you have to walk a fine line as a manager, because you know, and the data is out there, and this is something that Gabe Kapler really focused on early in the season, didn't want his starters facing the full lineup for a third time. And the data is out there. Everybody knows the times through the order penalty, but when you have a tired bullpen, you have to try and push your starters a little bit. So Kapler does that in each of the first two games. They come away with the win on Monday. They blow the game on Tuesday. Then you've got Wednesday, the rubber match of the series, and they hold on for a one-run win. They were 0-7 with runners in scoring position in that Wednesday game, 4-23 in the series, but they still managed to come away with a series win. And those are building blocks for a team. Those, you know, and again, this is that gray area that I'm not necessarily comfortable with because you can't really quantify it. But when you've got a first-year manager, when you've got a relatively young team, Jake Arrieta did get the start on Wednesday, and obviously he's not a young guy. But when you've got a relatively young team, you've got a team that hasn't won in several years. You've got an organization that hasn't experienced winning at the big league level in several years. These are important moments. These are important team-building things, chemistry-building teams. Things, confidence building things. So for the Phillies, very good series here for them. And this is not a great baseball team. This is a team that's won a lot of gritty games. The bullpen pitched really well. The offense has kind of gone in spurts. But, you know, this is a team where they need things like this. And that was a really big series win for the Philadelphia Phillies. That is something that can influence my thinking a little bit. Maybe not this weekend against the Nationals, but as we go forward here, when they get into some of those spots where they do have adversity, particularly when it comes to the workload of that bullpen. Now, the flip side here is the St. Louis Cardinals. So they get that Sunday night baseball win against the Cubs, go into Monday, get buried in a hole early with Miles Mikolas on the mound. A little bit of regression was in line for him, and that did hit on Monday, at least in that first inning. But you had the Marcell Ozuna gaffe defensively in the first game. Luke Weaver didn't pitch great on Tuesday. Mikolas, I mentioned with that little bit of regression on Monday. Michael Wacha strains his oblique in the rubber match there on Wednesday. To me, it feels like the Cardinals are kind of teetering a little bit on the brink of sort of putting themselves behind the eight ball in this NL Central race. They're behind the Brewers right now. They're behind the Cubs as well. And the Pirates just kind of keep hanging around. They don't seem to be going away. But it's a big start tonight for Carlos Martinez. Mike Matheny, you know, his job security has kind of been in question for a little while. Maybe that starts to pop up a little bit more. But the Cardinals, just they have a lot of problems. Offensively, this is not a very good team. Marcell Ozuna has gotten it going, but Matt Carpenter still trying to figure it out a little bit. They're missing Paul Gijong. Tommy Pham is kind of coming out of it a little bit. But they had 38 strikeouts in the three games in this series against only 7 walks. They hit 7 solo home runs coming out of Tuesday's game. They only had 2 guys with 10 or more doubles. they're just not manufacturing a whole lot of offense. And the starting staff has really carried them to this point. But if Mikolas does start to regress a little bit, now with Waka out, and he was a regression candidate anyway, Luke Weaver hasn't pitched great. The situation with Alex Reyes obviously takes away some of their bullpen depth. The Cardinals are kind of in a precarious spot right now. I think this is a team where the next couple of weeks are very, very important for them, because I think they could wind up burying themselves a little bit in this Central Division. I think there are a lot of problem areas for this team right now, and I'm just not entirely sure if they can pull themselves out of it. As it is, they're 4.5 out in the division. Certainly they could chase down a wild card spot, and they're right there in the thick of things for that. But I do think that this Cardinals team, which already has lost 7 of 10, is kind of sitting there in a spot where things could turn a little bit for them. And if that's the case, that makes Mike Matheny's job situation very interesting. And also, you kind of wonder what they can do in the second half. Will they be buyers? Will they tap into some of that farm system that they've got? It's a very interesting 2 weeks for the Cardinals here. But this series right here, where they, play 3 close games, but they strike out in a lot of key situations. They have some defensive miscues. They have, 3 pitchers that didn't pitch all that great in this series. And you kind of wonder here for the Cardinals if this is a sign of things to come. And that's certainly what my takeaway was on their side from that series. The New York Yankees took the first 2 from the Seattle Mariners. You've got Luis Severino, about $1.85 favorite to complete the sweep here today against James Paxton. That's a game that'll be starting as I'm getting this show posted. But in game 1 here, Domingo Herman pitched fantastic for the Yankees. He got some love over at Fangraphs. I believe that's a Jeff Sullivan piece. Haven't checked it out yet, but I did see the headline here today. So that's just another guy, another arm on this Yankees staff that just has above average to elite level stuff. It's amazing what the Yankees have been able to do to build up this pitching staff over the last few years. But the Mariners got shut down by him in game 1. Then you got the bullpen blow up in game 2. Juan Nicasio did come back after a couple weeks on the DL, pitched a scoreless frame, but James Pezos, Alex Colome, Ryan Cook, all giving up runs. There are some silver linings here in this series for the Mariners. One of them that Edwin Diaz hasn't pitched. So a little bit of downtime for him is very good, because he's had about as significant of a workload as anybody in Major League Baseball this season. But a good start for Felix Hernandez in that game that they lost yesterday. Was a 7-5 game. Kind of obscures the fact that Felix threw 5 quality innings in that one. Good for him to put together another good start, because they're going to need him. This Mariners team has gotten a lot of length from its starting pitching, has gotten some good length from Paxton, from Marco Gonzalez, who's the guy that's who got knocked around in that first start for them in this series. They've gotten some good length, but they need Felix to be a guy that's at least average, at least a guy that can give them a chance. And kudos to him for throwing a pretty quality game in yesterday's outing. But the Mariners, still a team with that Pythagorean win-loss outlier. They are a team in line for regression. And when I look at some of the things at the margins for these teams that are trying to stave off regression, I see some concerning things with the Mariners. Obviously, Edwin Diaz's workload in the bullpen is very, very significant. Getting Nicasio back can help them stave off regression a little bit. But when you look at the lineup composition for this team, you've got D. Gordon batting leadoff with a .312 on-base percentage. And I get it. He's a speed guy. He's a contact guy. He's got that .290 average. You don't see a whole lot of those in Major League Baseball anymore. But still, he's a .312 on-base percentage guy. You acquired Denard Span, who has a .362 on-base percentage for you, and he's hitting 6th or 7th. Down below, Kyle Seager, who's batting 5th with a sub-300 on-base percentage. These are the little things that can add up. These are the little things, over the course of a week, D. Gordon may have 8 to 10 more plate appearances than Denard Span. Kyle Seager may have more plate appearances than somebody like a Ben Gamble, who's hitting a little bit better, or even a Denard Span. Now, Seager, of course, has the power, so you kind of want to keep that somewhere around the middle of the lineup. But still, you're talking about a low on-base percentage guy hitting with the guys in front of him on base. And that's just not a recipe for offensive success. So I would like to see Scott Servais do some different things with the lineup construction here, but probably not something that's going to happen, which is another thing in my estimation that fuels this regression train for the Mariners. Because if you're winning lots of one-run games, your margin for error is very thin. if the bullpen starts to drop off, you'd like to see the team kind of overcome that in some different areas. Optimal lineup construction can help you do that because you give yourself the opportunity to score more runs. For the Mariners right now, though, while they've had a good offense so far this year, particularly against left-handed pitching, this is one of those situations where I think could be doing more. And the fact that they're not just adds a little bit more lighter fluid to that burning fire of regression that's coming for the Mariners. The Braves and Blue Jays split their little two-game series. And the reason I want to talk about this one real quickly here is that the Blue Jays, in 17 games during the month of June, have scored at least 4 runs in 11 of them. So this offense is coming around. We've been talking about them a lot here. They come up week after week in our exit velocity discussion. But they're starting to score some more runs now. And that's very important for them because they've had a rotation that has given up a lot of runs and they don't have a great bullpen. So while the Blue Jays may not necessarily be a buy team at this point, I do think that they could be a play-on team from a team total standpoint or from an underdog standpoint against pitchers either home or away that allow a lot of fly balls or line drives. You know, again, at home, their batting average still suppressed by what happens with ground balls, but they're starting to hit the ball in the air a little bit more here of late. Had 6 doubles off of Mike Soroka on Tuesday, a couple more on Wednesday. They're top 10 in both doubles and home runs. They've got an above-average walk rate. Their low BABIP is a problem because ground balls have not gone for hits for them. So when they face guys that they can elevate against, guys that they can get some extra base hits against, if you've got a fly ball pitcher with a walk rate problem, the Blue Jays are a team that you want to look to buy. So again, we try to look on each and every show here for some matchup-dependent handicapping angles, and I think we've got one here with the Blue Jays, where if they face fly ball pitchers with some walk rate issues, they are a team that you want to look to play on, whether you play their money line or you just play their team total over. The Chicago Cubs took 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers. They were supposed to play Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Monday's game got washed out, so they wound up playing the doubleheader there on Tuesday. And these teams will play again at Dodger Stadium for 4 games beginning Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday next week. The first 3 of those games are on ESPN. But all low-scoring games here in this series between the Dodgers and the Cubs, and you can kind of expect that with a doubleheader there on Tuesday and then kind of a sleepy getaway day game on Wednesday where the Dodgers were shut out in that one. We'll talk more about that game in a second. But Tyler Chatwood is a guy that I want to talk about here because, once again, this stat line for Tyler Chatwood is absurd. He finally now has more strikeouts than walks by 1. 64 strikeouts against 63 walks on the year. His line in that game on Tuesday pitched 5 innings, gave up only 2 hits, 1 run, walked 5, struck out 6. His 9th start out of 14 with at least 5 walks. And in those 9 starts with at least 5 walks, he's only allowed 19 runs. In his other 5 starts, he's given up 12 runs. His worst start of the season from a run scored standpoint was his only start with 1 walk. It is baffling, to be quite honest with you. I don't know what to do with this guy. And it's funny, too, because the market, with the low ERA, the high FIP, and the high XFIP, because he has this obscene walk rate, the market has faded Tyler Chatwood a lot. But he's done very well from a contact management standpoint. He's stranded a lot of runners. Call it a Houdini act, call it magic, call it whatever you want to do. But I'm not interested in fading Tyler Chatwood right now. I know, in my mind, that this is a guy that should be giving up more runs. But again, over his 5 innings in that game on Tuesday, only 7 base runners because he's done a good job from a contact management standpoint, has not allowed a lot of home runs this year. I think he's only allowed 3 or 4, something like that. So this is a guy who's been able to pitch around the walks. And look, I know what the stats say. I know what the numbers tell me. I know what common sense tells me. This is a guy just not giving up a lot of hits. He's been able to pitch around the walks. And for how long he can continue doing that, I don't exactly know. But I'm not interested in pissing away my bankroll expecting it to happen because he's shown now over half of a season that he can pitch around those free passes. So absolutely crazy for Tyler Chatwood, but I don't think there's a whole lot of actionable info there. I just don't. And I've never seen anything like this before. You've got a guy with a strikeout rate as high as his, but a walk rate that's also as high as his. And then to have some measure of success with doing it, absolutely crazy. But for the Dodgers here in this series, you know, I think this is a pretty misleading series loss for them. Rich Hill, very good in that start in Tuesday's nightcap in that 2-1 loss. But the Dodgers were 2-for-15 with a runner in scoring position in that Tuesday night game. So they had plenty of chances. The Cubs were just 1-for-5. They wound up walking it off. But the Dodgers with 15 at-bats with a runner in scoring position, and they only scored one run. That's a game that, you know, 9 times out of 10, 9.5 times out of 10, you're probably going to win that game when you have 10 more at-bats with a runner in scoring position, but they just couldn't get that big hit to break the game open. Then you flash forward to Wednesday with John Lester on the bump. John Lester only struck out one batter over 7 innings, but he only allowed 5 hits. So from a BABIP standpoint, batting average on balls in play, it was a very fortunate start for John Lester. Part of this has to do with the fact that the Cubs are very, very good defensively. That is something you want to consider when you're looking at BABIPs against for the Cubs pitchers and also some of the results after the fact for the teams that play the Cubs. But the Dodgers, to me, very easily could have swept this series. You know, if they get some more batted ball fortunes in either one of the two games that they lost, they could have very well swept this series. And I think as you look ahead to next week, with them getting the Cubs again at home in the 4-game series, I think I may look to play the Dodgers series price in that one that begins on Monday. Only 5 runs in 3 games is a little bit misleading here. I think we get some value based on that. Again, 15 at-bats with a runner in scoring position in Tuesday night's game. Just didn't have the batted ball fortunes on Wednesday in the getaway day game. But Ross Stripling pitched well. Rich Hill pitched well. Kenta Maeda wasn't great, but the bullpen saved him there in that first game. The Dodgers, I think there's some value on them going forward here in the next series against the Cubs, but also over the next little while, because they are still an underachiever from a Pythagorean win-loss standpoint, and they are a team that, you know, really has tremendous pitching depth. And we've seen that as they've been able to overcome some injuries here this year. All right, let's talk real quickly about Oakland sweeping a 2-gamer from the Padres. Kind of puts a little bit of a stop to the Padres train, which had been rolling right along here. But, you know, Johnny Lucchese got knocked around in the second game yesterday, as that was a 12-4 loss for the Padres. Position player wound up pitching to end that one, and he was the only pitcher in that game to not allow a home run. But for Oakland here, a few things to consider. One of them is that their bullpen, 5 shutout innings in game one, 10 strikeouts against 1 walk. Their bullpen is really, really good. Blake Treinen at the back end has been fantastic. He has elite level stuff. He's a very hot commodity on the trade market. If Oakland decides to move him, I don't think they will, because he has 2 more years of contract control after this. But if they move him, they could get a mint for him. Same thing for San Diego and Brad Hand, with those two very good relievers going in this series. But the other thing is, you know, I don't understand why the market will steam guys coming off the DL. Lucchese was coming off the DL here in this series for the Padres, and he got blasted. And I don't get it. It's an angle that I like to play. I'm upset that I missed it here in this one with that pitching change with him coming off the DL. But I just don't get that angle. And for Oakland here, you know, very easy for them, because not only do you knock around the starter coming off the DL, then you get a marginal guy in Robbie Irwin who throws 60 pitches, another marginal guy in Phil Hughes who throws 56 pitches. So for Oakland, you know, everything's set up nicely for them. And Oakland is a team, and we'll talk about this a little bit later in the show, Oakland is a team that will beat up on marginal pitching. If you've got above average off-speed stuff and high velocity, they will not hit you. But if you're a run-of-the-mill type of guy, or in the case of Lucchese coming off the DL, that's a spot that's really good for Oakland. And they've had some of those spots here lately as they've crept a couple games over 500. So that's a good betting angle. Again, a matchup-dependent betting angle to look for with the Oakland A's. And again, we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. All right, let's go ahead and get into our exit velocity update for this week. Batting average on batted balls of 95-plus miles per hour. Last season was 558. We are not going to touch that here this season. This week, we're at 516. 5 of the last 6 weeks, it was 517. So that's basically where we're going to sit, I think, for the foreseeable future, in that 515 to 518 range. 518 would be a new high watermark for the season, but 516 here this past week. And the Dodgers, 556, they're the best, but they did come down a little bit from last week. And some of that has to do with the BABIP luck that they saw in that Cubs series. Cubs, an elite defensive team as well. So that can kind of suppress batting average a little bit, even on high velocity contact. The Yankees are second at 555. Diamondbacks are third, 551. The Rays are fourth at 536, but they've come down 4 points. How about the Detroit Tigers making an appearance here at 533? Cincinnati Reds were sixth at 533. The lowest last week was 537, though. So again, as we've been talking about, as we've gone throughout the season here, those big outliers on the plus side or the minus side generally come back to the pack as we go along here. Obviously, talented lineups like the Dodgers and the Yankees can continue to be significant outliers on the plus side, but you know, we are seeing those teams in the 4 and 5 range kind of regressing back towards the mean a little bit. The worst teams on 95 plus batted balls, the Royals at 468, they're down 8 points here this week. The Jays 475 is they're up 4 points. Indians 494, they're up 5 points. 494 now ranks 28th. Last week, 28th was 479. So we have seen some growth once again from those teams that are the farthest outliers from the mean. Mets 496, that's the Coors Field factor there for them as they pick up a big jump. Phillies 498, same bottom five as last week, a little bit different of an order. The Phillies were 26th at 490 last week. We only have two teams below 490 this week. So again, there's an example of that regression to the mean. So we should keep seeing it with the Blue Jays, should see it with the Indians as well. And at some point, I'd like to think the Royals hit, but then again, maybe not. All right, the WOBA on batted balls of 95-plus miles per hour. Last year, 695. Once again, we will not touch that this year. But we reached a new high point for the season at 636. We're up 26 points in WOBA on high-velocity contact since the start of the season when we were at 610. Last week, we were at 635. The two previous weeks, 633. So we are going up a little bit. As the weather warms up, that's not a particularly big surprise, to say the least. Batting average may not go up, but power production should. So therefore, WOBA would go up. Batting average could very well stay about the same. The best team in Major League Baseball in weighted on base average on 95-plus batted balls remains the New York Yankees. They're up 1 point to 717. Dodgers dropping 12 points this week to 703. Once again, facing the Cubs can do that to you. Diamondbacks at 700, they're up 9 points. The Twins, 661, they're up a point. Rangers, a newcomer to the top five at 656. And again, you see that big gap there between the Diamondbacks and the Twins of 39 points. My guess would be the Yankees and Dodgers stay up there. I would think at some point the Diamondbacks probably do come down a little bit. But, you know, again, not a big surprise to see those outliers coming back to the mean. The worst WOBA on 95-plus batted balls belongs to the Kansas City Royals. They are at 550. They're down 30 points over the last 2 weeks. They have the lowest mark in baseball by 43 points. The Miami Marlins at 593. They're down 7 points this week. But the Royals, 43 points worse than any other team in weighted on base average on 95-plus batted balls. So the thing about the Royals is, you know, they just don't have a lot of talent offensively. And the talent that they do have, probably going to be on the move here soon. Mike Moustakas will get traded. Whit Merrifield won't be, and he'll probably be their only All-Star game representative now that Kelvin Herrera has been traded over to the Nationals. But, you know, this is a team where they just don't make a lot of quality contact. And they are a team where it's hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel for them. It's hard to see them coming up towards the mean. Now, naturally, they should, being 43 points behind anybody else. But again, when you look up and down that lineup, there's just really not a whole lot to get excited about. They don't draw walks, so that doesn't help them a whole lot. They don't hit for a lot of power. Kauffman Stadium traditionally has been a pretty good extra base hit park in the summertime. They just don't have guys that drive the ball to the outfield. So they will be a significant outlier for most of the season, and I don't think that that's one that you want to look to bet on. I don't think we see a run of Royals team total overs at any point in time here. I think they're just going to be the worst team in the league and be that by a pretty large margin. Ranking 28th here this week is the Toronto Blue Jays at 604, but they are up 20 points over the last 2 weeks. So we've been talking about that positive regression for Toronto. It has been hitting for them. The Mets at 613, again, Coors Field, a primary catalyst there. And then the Pirates at 614, only two teams under 600 this week, three last week, for the week prior. So again, exactly what I've been talking about here in that those teams that are at the bottom generally will come up and regress to the mean, whether it's positive or negative, except for probably the Royals and the Yankees. The Yankees will be an outlier throughout the season, and the Royals probably will be as well. All right, let's take a look here at some more matchup-dependent handicapping analysis. And I had some fun with Baseball Savant here today. And again, probably best that you subscribe to my notes. Send me an email, adam@bangthebook.com. But game is really dependent on pitching velocity now at this point. You see a lot of guys throwing hard, throwing harder than ever before. It's a very, very specialized game. So when you look league-wide, the batting average on pitches of 95-plus miles per hour, again, this is pitch velocity, 95-plus miles per hour, the league batting average is .238 with a WOBA of .305. So I started to break it down from a team-specific standpoint here, looking at how teams do against high velocity. The best team in baseball by a large margin is the Chicago Cubs. They're batting .303 against pitches of 95-plus. Again, league average, .238. The Phillies are second at .278. Yankees third at .270. And here's two that will really surprise you. The Marlins are fourth in batting average on 95-plus pitch velocity at .268. And the San Diego Padres are fifth at .263. So the Marlins and the Padres have done pretty well against hard throwers, at least from a batting average standpoint. Now, WOBA on high velocity pitches, again, pitches of 95-plus, the Cubs at .369, Phillies .359, Yankees .353, Indians .350, Astros .347, Nationals .345, Marlins .337, Dodgers, Rockies, Mariners, on down from there. A lot of these teams aren't surprises. A lot of talented offensive personnel for the Cubs, Yankees, Indians, Astros, Nationals, Dodgers. Not a big surprise there. But what we can see is that a team like the Marlins, for example, does really well against guys that throw hard. That's not something that we would expect. So if they face a starting pitcher that throws really hard, maybe the Marlins are a team total overplay in that scenario. Also, another important thing about this and why I was happy to bring this up on today's show is that when you think about perception in the betting market, who are the guys that have the biggest lines? The guys that throw hard, the guys that induce a lot of swings and misses, the guys that get a lot of strikeouts. Well, you've got some offenses here. The Cubs, the Phillies, the Yankees, the Indians. Offenses that do really well against those guys that are going to have a higher perception out there in the betting market. The Phillies is one you can really look to take advantage of. Cubs prices are generally going to be high. Yankees prices and Indians prices, same thing. But the Phillies are doing really well against hard throwers. And that's important. It's important from a late inning standpoint for live betting because there are so many relievers that throw hard. And it's important when you look at the Phillies against guys that throw extremely hard. It's a decent matchup for them. Now, where this could have more actionable info is looking at the worst teams against high velocity pitchers. So again, this is pitching velocity, 95 plus miles per hour. The worst team in baseball is the Oakland Athletics, with a .168 batting average. Orioles are second at .176, Rangers third, .190, Blue Jays .193, White Sox .199. That's your bottom five, and then the round out the bottom 10, Pirates, Diamondbacks, Mets, Rays, and Cardinals. The worst weighted on base average on pitch velocities of 95-plus, the White Sox at .243, A's at .244, Blue Jays .260, the Mets at .262, Orioles .267, Rangers, Rays, Royals, Padres, and Tigers round out the bottom 10. So basically, what I'm looking at here is that when Oakland is facing a guy that throws really hard, 95-plus, 94-plus, something like that, they are going to struggle. When they face the James Paxtons of the world, when they face the Houston Astros rotation, they're going to have a lot of problems. So when the A's face guys that throw super hard, 95-plus, 94-plus, they are a fade team. And that's what I was talking about in that series with the Padres, is that the Padres don't have a whole lot of guys that throw real hard. Even their very good bullpen relievers are command types of guys that don't throw exceptionally hard. So the A's have a good matchup there. When the A's take on teams that don't put a premium on velocity, they are a good team to back. When they take on teams that put a premium on velocity, they are not. Very cut and dry. Very matchup dependent here. Obviously, the Orioles have not fared well with high velocity either. Neither have the Blue Jays. So those are three teams you can look to fade against high velocity pitchers. And again, you know, a lot of this stuff kind of goes hand in hand with the records and the success that teams have had. There aren't a whole lot of surprises on this list. However, you can find some angles to look to play. And if you don't want to lay the big chalk, take the A's team total under. Take the Orioles team total under. You're not going to have to lay big chalk on things like that when they face pitchers that are very likely to shut them down. So there is a lot of good information here that you can use from a matchup-dependent standpoint. So let's flip the script a little bit here. As we just talked about pitchers that throw really hard and the success that teams have had against those guys, how about how teams have fared against off-speed pitches? Off-speed pitches would be slider, changeup, curveball, knuckle curve, knuckleball, forkball, ephus, and screwball. Obviously, not a whole lot of knuckleballers out there, forkballers, not many ephus throwers or screwball guys. But so basically, you're looking at guys, or you're looking at lineups against sliders, changeups, curveballs, and knuckle curveballs, right? So league average, batting average on off speed, 218. So again, big difference there, even against high velocity. 238 against velocities of 95 plus, 218 against the off-speed stuff or breaking balls, if you want to refer to it as that. The Astros, 256. They're a very good breaking ball hitting team. The Pirates, 249. The Braves, 248. Rockies, 242. Red Sox, 236. To round out the top 10, Cardinals, 229. Yankees, 227. Mariners, 227. Giants, 226. A's, 226. Top WOBA. The Braves at 308, Astros 301, Yankees 298, Pirates 289, Rockies 287, Red Sox 287, Dodgers, A's, Twins, Mariners, on down from there. So if you've got pitchers that are throwing maybe 60% off-speed stuff or 55% off-speed stuff, the Braves are a good bet. The Astros are a good bet. Not surprisingly, the Yankees are a good bet. But the Pirates and Rockies are good bets, which is very interesting. But when you think about it, with the Rockies, one of the things that happens at Coors Field, and I talked about this as a good bit of intel to use to your advantage with Seth Lugo on the mound yesterday for the Mets, is that Seth Lugo's curveball is one of the best in baseball from a spin rate standpoint. Well, when you pitch in the low air density there, in the thin air of Coors Field, there's not as much resistance on the baseball. So it cuts down on that spin rate, which cuts down on the movement. So the Rockies at home against guys dependent on breaking balls are going to have a lot of problems. This is why when Colorado faced Freddie Peralta at home, who threw 90% fastballs, he just pumped it by him. Because the Rockies, as we saw earlier, don't hit very well against high velocity. They do okay against hard throwers, but that would be on the road. At home, they have problems with velocity, but they can hit off speed stuff because it doesn't have the same spin. It doesn't have the same drop. So the Rockies at home against guys that are high off speed usage pitchers are going to be a very good bet. So keep that in mind as we go throughout the rest of the season here. But again, teams that fare well against off speed, the Astros, not a surprise, the Braves, the Pirates, which could be a bit of a surprise, and of course the Yankees. So now who does not fare well against off speed stuff? The Marlins, 187 batting average. The Padres, 192. And keep in mind, those two teams were in the top five on pitchers that throw 95+. But here they are, very bad against off-speed stuff. This is not a big surprise. When you see young lineups that strike out a ton, it's because you see velocity in the minor leagues. You will see guys that throw hard in A-ball, double-A, maybe not as much in triple-A because you've got a lot of tweener major league type guys. But you will see a lot of guys that throw hard. The problem is when you get to the show, you've got dudes that are throwing nasty-ass breaking balls that you cannot hit. The Marlins and the Padres have very young lineups, so they can get around on velocity. They've been fine-tuned to hit that as they've gone up through the system. Breaking balls, not so much. So when the Marlins and Padres take on guys that are very high breaking ball usage pitchers, they are easy fade candidates going forward. The Phillies at 193, again, the Phillies, a team that fares very well against high velocity, not so well against a lot of off-speed stuff. Again, another piece of actionable information for you there. When they face pitchers that are breaking ball dependent, they will struggle. The Mets at 196, White Sox 201, Diamondbacks 202, Orioles 202, Royals 204, Rangers 207. The Indians round out the bottom 10 at 208. So the worst WOBA list, not a big surprise here. Pretty much all the same teams that we just talked about. Marlins at 222, Padres 237. So big outliers there. They're both very, very bad against off-speed pitches. Royals 246, they're bad against everything. White Sox 250, Orioles 250, Mets 254, Phillies 256, Brewers 261 as they make an appearance here. Tigers 261, Indians 262. So the Indians against guys that throw a lot of breaking balls have had some problems there in that split where they're very good against high velocity pitchers, not great against high off-speed pitchers. So that is something to keep in mind with them. So what does this all mean? As we kind of sum this up a little bit here, the Cubs, Phillies, Indians, Yankees, Marlins, Padres, Astros, Nationals, all lineups you can bet with some level of confidence when they take on premier velocity, very hard throwers. Again, that list 95 plus on the pitch velocity. Teams to fade against hard throwers of 95 plus, the A's especially. The A's are the easiest fade on this list when they face a guy who throws really hard. Orioles, Rangers, Blue Jays, White Sox, Mets. Some teams that you can buy against high off-speed usage pitchers, Astros, Braves, Yankees. Sell teams against off-speed throwers, Marlins, Padres, Indians, Phillies. Again, it's important stuff. You know, and we talked on Monday's show in the Monday Mailbag about ways you can narrow down the card. Well, if you remember that the A's suck against high-velocity pitchers and they're facing one, that's a focal point. That's something you can immediately circle that game and say, I want to look into that game more. Cubs against hard throwers, I want to look into that game more because the Cubs lead baseball on batting average or in batting average and WOBA, pitches of 95 plus. So they will hit premier velocity. The Phillies will hit premier velocity. So these are all things that you can use to your advantage to narrow down the card a little bit. And again, I've got all this stuff listed for you here, adam@bangthebook.com, if you want my notes for the show. Again, a lot of these teams aren't necessarily surprises. Good offenses are good offenses almost across the board. But the Indians have a good offense. They don't hit guys that throw a lot of off-speed stuff. So, you know, those are angles that you can look to use to your advantage. And again, if you don't want to lay the heavy chalk fading the Royals against everybody, or the A's against hard throwers, or the Marlins or Padres against off-speed guys, play team total unders. You can use these for those team totals, those derivative bets where, you know, you can get some crazy shit that happens during a game, whether it's a starter getting blown up or the bullpen or whatever else, but then you've got this team total play where you've really put in the research, really put in the work, and you can find a lot of good intel that you can use for those team totals. And that includes some of the stuff that I just talked about here on today's show. So again, adam@bangthebook.com if you want to get the notes. All right, let's go down the lines. Look at some line moves dating back to Tuesday's show. We saw money come in on Domingo Herman and the Yankees. And like I told you, I fully expected to see Yankees money come in, sharp money, for the first two games of this series. I expected it to come in today as well, but I also didn't expect the Yankees to be a $2 favorite with Severino on the mound. I thought it would be in the minus 180 range where it's coming down to now. So not a big surprise to see money hit the board on Paxton a little bit. Some of that also may be correlated with people taking a shot on Seattle for the first five. I think that makes some sense as well. But again, I'll be posting this show as that game has already started. So the fact of the matter is that, you know, we saw money coming against the Mariners. And as I'll talk about later in the show, I think that's the case this weekend as well. So a fade of Mike Clevenger as the White Sox were in town. The White Sox are just terrible. They looked really bad in that sweep against the Indians. But money keeps coming in on Mike Clevenger. And, you know, he's got the low ERA and some of the higher peripherals, and he's got the left on base percentage and the low BABIP, and it's all things that we would traditionally look at as signs of regression for a pitcher. But I don't think he's worth fading. You know, the fastball command has gotten much better this season. The velocity's up a little bit. He's sequencing the fastball really well. He's using the fastball up in the zone, and then he's working the edges down in the zone. It's been a real impressive total package for Mike Clevenger this year. And he's already got elite secondary command. Very good command of his slider, curveball, and changeup. He induces a lot of weak contact. The market keeps going against him, and I don't think that's the right call. I think this kid is for real. I think this kid is legit, and I think he's a weapon for the Indians come playoff time. I really like what Mike Clevenger has been able to do so far this season for the Indians. So another move on the Reds. We saw money on the Reds in both games here against the Tigers. This time it was Matt Boyd against Sal Romano. The Matt Boyd fades will continue to keep coming, and this one was correct. We played the over in that game. It did come through for us. Matt Boyd is a guy that will pitch well at Comerica Park. Spacious outfield, huge outfield, extreme fly ball guy. Great American Ballpark is not a spacious outfield. If it's over your head there, it's probably gone. So for Matt Boyd, that was a very, very difficult start. And again, that's one of those bits to circle back to Monday's question in the Monday mailbag. That is a focal point for you on a game. If you've got a fly ball pitcher who has a friendly home park and he's on the road where he does not have a friendly road park, that's a game to circle. That's a way to narrow down the card. We did that by taking the over in that game. I thought the price was a little high in Cincinnati. We gave a percent of it back by taking the Tigers in that one. But the over was the stone-cold right call in that one. And it was because that was a bad setup for Matt Boyd. So, again, that's something that you can use to narrow down the card. I was a little bit surprised to see some Dodgers money come for the nightcap in that game. It was Rich Hill and Mike Montgomery. Again, Rich Hill coming off the DL. And I don't understand why the market does this with guys coming off the DL. I'll talk about another one of those examples on Wednesday. But, man, I don't know. I don't get it. I need to see a guy look like he's got it figured out at the big league level before I want to back him coming off the DL. Maybe if a guy looks dominant in his minor league rehab stints. But outside of that, I just don't get it. Saw some money come in on Blake Snell, the Tampa Bay Rays. That was against Justin Verlander there in that one. Verlander with a little bit of mild regression, so not a surprise to see that line move, but he was about a 280 favorite or so in that game. Came down about 20 cents or so it really didn't take that much to move that number down. So a big move on Chris Sale. Chris Sale's getting steamed every start now. Price doesn't matter. He's going up 20 or 30 cents every time he takes the mound. Not really a big surprise, to be totally honest with you. Saw Matt Cook fade out in Anaheim for Arizona. Matt Cook has since been sent down, so the fun is over with fading him or playing team total overs against him. Sorry, take a little bit of a drink here to finish today's show strong. Wednesday, we saw the Reds get to Michael Fulmer the third time through. The Reds took money in that one once again as well. That was their biggest favorite role of the season, and they wound up winning. So, you know, the Reds look like a team that's just going to play pretty decent baseball the rest of the way here, and you know, the market has responded and has actually been paid off pretty well with the Reds here in recent weeks. So money came in on Jay Happ and the Blue Jays. That was against Anibal Sanchez and the Braves. Interesting to see that Braves fade there. I thought that price was a little bit too high. Closed in the 160 range. Toronto against anybody as a 160 favorite is a leap of faith, especially with what the Braves have done to lefties this year. But Happ was good enough, and the Blue Jays got him some run support there in that one. Minor Jake Arrieta fade, not a big surprise. Actually, it was a big surprise because that was Michael Wacha going for the Cardinals there. And Wacha's been a guy that the market has bet against a lot this season, expecting regression from him. Now we don't have to worry about it because he's going on the DL for an oblique strain. Saw heavy Corey Kluber money come in against the White Sox. He closed well over a $3 favorite. Indians put a big number on Reynaldo Lopez in the bullpen in that game, and Corey Kluber cruised to the victory there. Saw Ross Stripling become a flipped favorite in that day game, Dodgers-Cubs. John Lester is a regression candidate. Money will come in against him again next week. He'll get another crack at the Dodgers, and I will be on the Dodgers in that game, I can tell you that. Assuming everything works out okay from a situational standpoint, I should put my foot in my mouth a little bit there because I talked about that with that Phillies-Cardinals game on Monday. So I will likely play the Dodgers against John Lester there, assuming everything's okay with their bullpen and all that type of stuff. Saw the Padres take big money yesterday. That was Joey Lucchesi against Frankie Montas and the A's. Again, I don't get it. Dude off an injury, no way I would look to back him there, especially make him a $1.30 favorite in that situation. Saw money coming against the Giants and Derek Holland. That was Jose Urena and the Marlins. Giants held serve there despite the line move at home in that game. Once again, we saw the Yankees take money. That was Jonathan Loaisiga in that one for the Yankees. That was against King Felix, who, again, pitched well But the Yankees just kind of put that game away late with that Giancarlo Stanton walk-off winner. Red Sox took money David Price against Lance Lynn. Look, Lance Lynn's legit. You know, I've talked about this with the Twins in my article, and maybe I haven't mentioned it enough on the show, but with the hirings that they've made, Derek Falvey, Josh Kalk, who's a pitch FX genius, they're actively doing things to elevate marginal pitchers. This is the same thing that the Brewers have done with guys like Chase Anderson and Ulys Chacin and Junior Guerra and Brent Suter and Zach Davies to some extent. This is what good teams do. They find ways to maximize what's there. The Twins obviously don't have the record that the Brewers have this year, but Lance Lynn has been so much better since the month of April that he's actually a guy that you can look to play on. And the market really falling for it there. We played the under in that game for the first five, and that came through. But the market doesn't realize that Lance Lynn's a pretty useful pitcher right now. Market also fading Kyle Gibson a little bit early for this game here with Rick Porcello today. The Twins pitching staff, as we go forward throughout the year, I think should continue to improve. Just maybe too little too late as they try to chase down the Indians. On Thursday, we saw money come in on the Mariners, James Paxton, Luis Severino, as we've already talked about. Porcello moved up to minus 130. Now we saw some buyback on that game in the minus 115 range. Seeing money hit the board on Kyle Freeland. If you listen to this show right away here today, I do like the Rockies for the first five. That's Steven Matz against Kyle Freeland in that one. Seeing some White Sox money hit the board, that's Chris Bassitt going for the A's against Lucas Giolito. Giolito's not great. I think it's a good spot for the A's. Maybe a team total overplay there with them, although Giolito doesn't give up a lot of home runs. The White Sox are just a mess, to say the least. But my pick for today, we're going to throw out an underdog play for you here today. Get a little bit crazy with this one. I'm going to take the San Diego Padres today over the San Francisco Giants. I know the Padres just kind of took a step back a little bit in that series against the A's, but keep in mind that game on Tuesday night was a blown save from the bullpen. They had that game. Looked like it was going to be a low-scoring victory for them. Brad Hand gives up a home run to Stephen Piscotty. Jed Lowry goes yard in extra innings. The A's steal that game from the Padres. So the Padres are still playing decent baseball, yesterday's blowout aside. But Madison Bumgarner is just not sharp yet. 9 strikeouts over his 3 starts, 3 per start. Walked 4 or 5 his last time out. He's not sharp yet. He doesn't have the control, doesn't have the command. Tyson Ross has been very good for the Padres this season. He's pitching really well. I'm not big on the Giants. I think the Padres are a little bit underrated right now in this matchup based on the line that's out there. You can read my article for more thoughts on this game as well as the rest of today's card over at bangthebook.com. But I'm going to take Tyson Ross and the Padres in this one tonight against Madison Bumgarner and the San Francisco Giants. Last I saw, it was in the plus 140 range. I think that's a pretty good take back there. Again, being an underdog of that size, it's a play that will lose more often than it will win, but I think the value is there, and I really think that the Padres can take advantage of Madison Bumgarner before he gets it all put together. All right, let's preview 4 series for the weekend here as we wrap up this edition of the Bettors Box. We'll start with the Cardinals and Brewers. Carlos Martinez, Brent Suter tonight. Jack Flaherty, Junior Guerra tomorrow. Miles Mikolas, Chase Anderson in a battle of a couple guys in line for regression based on the metrics. You'll probably see an over move in that game on Saturday. And then Luke Weaver and Ulys Chacin on Sunday. Tough spot for the Cardinals. I just talked about them at the top of today's show. I think they're kind of on the brink of falling behind in this NL Central race. Injuries have popped up. The offense isn't doing a whole lot. The starters haven't looked particularly strong here of late. Carlos Martinez has a big start tonight. It's a tone-setting kind of start for this series for the Cardinals. If they don't get tonight, Jack Flaherty's kind of become their ace. He goes tomorrow. Mikolas with the regression signs. Weaver hasn't pitched well. This could be a series that gets away from the Cardinals if they don't get tonight's game. Brewers very good against right-handed pitching on the season. They get 4 of them here in this series. It's a big series for both of these teams, but I think especially St. Louis to keep from falling off of the cliff here. I think they're kind of on the precipice. I think this is a tough spot for them. We'll see how they set the tone here tonight with Carlos Martinez. Blue Jays and Angels getting it together for 4 out at Angel Stadium. Aaron Sanchez, Tyler Skaggs tonight. Marco Estrada, John Lamb tomorrow. Marcus Stroman returns from the DL on Saturday. He'll take on Andrew Heaney. Jaime Garcia and Jaime Barria on Sunday. Toronto's gotten this offense going a little bit. I'll be curious to see what they do here with three lefties to open up this series, including John Lamb, who's really not a very good one there in that Friday game. The Angels don't impress me much, but Marcus Stroman, we'll see how much of it was an injury thing for him, but he has the highest average exit velocity against among pitchers with at least 120 batted balls this season. He was giving up a ton of hard contact, no command whatsoever. I'll be very curious to see how he looks on Saturday. I don't know if I'll lay the price with Andrew Heaney, who I do like quite a bit, and he's on the opposite end of the spectrum with a lot of weak contact induced this year, but Stroman coming off the DL is not a guy I would look to take. I don't know what the line will look like there or what the line move will look like, but I have no interest in touching Stroman on Saturday. Mariners Red Sox, another stiff challenge here for the Mariners as they go to Fenway Park this weekend. Wade LeBlanc, Stephen Wright in the first one on Friday, Mike Leake, Eduardo Rodriguez on Saturday, Marco Gonzalez and Chris Sale on Sunday. Catching the two best lefties, really the two best starters for the Red Sox in this series. They missed Sale last time. The Mariners' Pythagorean win-loss regression and base runs regression loom very large in this series. I think Boston gets steamed in all three games. So if you play the overnights with the Red Sox, I think you get some line value there. Then you can decide if you want to buy back or not. I think the Red Sox fare pretty well in this series. I really do. They're getting a couple of lefties, and they haven't hit lefties well this year. But you're getting another look at Wade LeBlanc. Marco Gonzalez is, you know, a guy that could have some problems in a smaller ballpark. I think this series sets up really well for the Boston Red Sox. One more series to look at here, and there's really not a whole lot to talk about with this one, but I like to touch on the Sunday Night Baseball game on every Thursday show. Phillies and Nationals. You got Zach Eflin, Tanner Roark coming up on Friday. Aaron Nola goes Saturday. Nick Pivetta goes Sunday. To be determined for both of those games for Washington, so we'll see what they wind up going with. For Sunday Night Baseball, the Nationals go to Tampa Bay. The Phillies head back home and host the Yankees. So no betting angles coming out of Sunday Night Baseball here for this week, but I do like to touch on it on every show just in case. Talked about a lot on today's program. Again, Adam at bangthebook.com to get the notes for the show, and I hope to send those out a little bit earlier here today than I have been with some of the previous editions. But over at bangthebook.com, check out that state that is sports betting legal in my state page. Go to your state. See what the latest is there. I think it's a really cool feature that we've incorporated. NFL win totals, World Cup, NBA draft props, lots of great stuff over at bangthebook.com, where we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. And don't forget about that Bang200 promo code over at DSI Sportsbook. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Have a happy, healthy, smart, safe weekend. And remember that you will never strike out when you're in the better's box.